Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy, and thanks for tuning in. The buzz around the studio this morning was, I don't know if you heard the story out of Louisiana. And by the way, Terry Hutchinson coming up in just a minute. But I guess in Louisiana, and I know that's a long way from here, and what does it have to do with us? But the story fascinates me. They sent a construction crew out to demolish a house, right? You would think, now I'm just a dumb radio guy, what do I know, right? But you would think that it would be important that you got the right house. Like, you just double check the address. Maybe when you get there, the house is already kind of dilapidated and beat up, and so you, okay, this is the right one. Yeah, we're good. Well, apparently they started tearing down a house, and about halfway through the demolition, an old guy comes out in his bathrobe or pajamas or whatever and says, "Hey, what are you doing in my house?" And they had gone to the wrong address. Yeah. And so the old guy is now homeless, and I would think, I don't know any more details beyond that, but that the construction company will take care of him. But apparently the guy in charge of the demolition crew went to the wrong house, didn't realize that the house that he was tearing down was not dilapidated and condemned, but started tearing it down anyway. This is one of those stories that pops up in the news occasionally, and you're like, we got to follow this. We got to find out the rest of the story. Was the guy, the demolition guy, drunk? What did he, you know, who was responsible for getting him the address that was wrong? How could he not realize that the home he was tearing down was occupied and was still in decent shape? We don't know the rest of it. We need Paul Harvey around for the rest of the story. Anyway, let's bring Terry Hutchinson in from the Washington County School Board. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing good. You haven't had your house torn down recently, have you?
No.
No. Okay, that's good.
No. But, you know, the story you're talking about reminds me of sometimes we hear about amputations that go wrong.
Yeah.
Surgeries that go wrong. I mean, just all kinds of human nature kicks in and errors occur.
I saw a meme or some pictures on the internet the other day. It said in Magic Marker, a guy was in the hospital, Magic Marker, he'd written on his leg, "Not this leg, dummy." And then on the other leg, he'd written, "Not this one either. I'm not here for an amputation." So anyway, yeah.
That's a little proactive on his part. Yeah. I think that's a wise thing.
At least they weren't tattoos, I guess. A Sharpie will come off after a few washings. But
maybe.
Terry, tell us a little bit about the Washington County School Board and how things are going there. Obviously, it's spring break, so a lot of kids, most kids, and there are a few private schools that are still going, but most kids are out of school this week, teachers, and in fact, that's one of the reasons that Steve Dunham is not with us today. Steve is off traveling with his family during spring break, but in any pressing issues, anything in the schools that we need to know about?
Well, there's always things going on, Andy. We always have some personnel things. So we actually have a meeting Monday. We have another meeting the following Monday. We had a meeting last Tuesday. We had a meeting the week before. So it just, you know, there's always a lot of things that are coming up, especially at this time of year where we're starting to staff. We have retirements that get announced, particularly in administration. So sometimes the principal will retire and we've got to replace them. So, you know, sometimes that's some shuffling. We have a couple of different ways that we do that. One of them is if it's a sitting principal, then that person can be considered without opening it up for interviews. So say a principal at one elementary school wants to go to another elementary school, we can just do that. If they're moving up, then they have to go through the interview process. And part of that interview process, there's actually a couple of them. At the end of every year, the school board participates with various groups of administrators and puts together a pool. And we have a pool for vice principals, for assistant principals, and then we have a pool for principals. And those principals are qualified based on, you know, They can go to a high school or they can go to a middle school, intermediate school. And if an opening comes up during that year, that next year, then we select our candidates after we publicly announce it from outside the school district, but also in the school district. And if they're in the school district, they need to have been in that pool. They need to be in that pool to be able to be considered. And one of the things I've noticed over the years is, especially the last few years, is that every year the quality to make those pools, the line is higher. So, for example, 2 years ago for, I believe it was our principals, we everybody that had a certain score after we interviewed them and considered all of the things that factors that we go into, you know, every one of them had a certain line. And the following year, after we interviewed all of the candidates for the pool, that line would have meant that two-thirds of the people who were interviewing would have been in the pool.
Okay.
And so we upped the line. So every year the quality of candidates gets better. And so we have a number of people who can come in and do what we need them to do in various positions every year. And we've been doing a really good job of getting people better prepared, which means that when we put somebody into a school, they're more likely, they're going to be more effective. And there's a lot of things that they consider. I mean, I was really impressed with the last round of interviews we did a month or two ago, where we had some needs in a particular school, and the people who came in were able to talk in very technical terms about the type of data, the type of instruction, the type of things that they would do in order to help that school progress. And so it was just, it's just really been rewarding to see how that's done. That's something that we started doing when I got on the board about 8 years ago, and now we're beginning to see it really function in the way it was intended.
You know, it's, and that's a little bit opposite of what some of the business world has experienced, where you've seen a lot of businesses, especially smaller businesses, having to hire people who maybe aren't quite qualified for the job, or having to bump their pay and maybe amenities, or not, that's not the right word, benefits up, just to get someone that is somewhat qualified to apply. But it sounds like you don't have that problem when it comes to hiring, at least the administrative part of things.
Yeah, and we've been able to really help the teachers over the last several years because the legislature has been able to give us some really good funding. So, for example, in the last 3 years, what we call our weighted pupil unit has received a combined increase of about 17%.
Wow.
Now, some of that, it's slowed down a bit because of inflation. So in other words, our ability to get ahead with what we pay our teachers and our other employees has been shrinking thanks to the inflation, which is, you know, beyond our control. And it's obviously caused by people who don't know what they're doing, but that's a totally different radio topic, I would say. Anyway, the legislature has been really, really good, and because we manage our money so well, we've been able to pass on a lot of that to the teachers and the other employees. And that helps us be competitive in the employment market. But there are areas where we, too, have the same problems as local businesses who can't, you know, they have a hard time with their employees. And one of those is paraprofessionals. Mm. And there's been some legal things that the legislature has done that have not enabled us to be as competitive as we'd like. And we've been working on that.
As far as teachers are concerned, you know, the perception, and you can tell me your thoughts on if this perception is reality, but perception is teachers are low paying jobs, relatively speaking. But I will say this: when I graduated from college, I graduated at the same time as my sister-in-law. I took a job in journalism. She took a job as a school teacher. She actually made more money than me, and she had the summer off. And so, you know, for people to say, well, teachers don't get paid enough, I agree they don't get paid enough, but they do get paid. Your thoughts on the pay scale for teachers?
Well, you know, if you look at the long term since I've lived in Washington County, I mean, we've had kind of booms and busts. And in the boom times, yeah, teachers are not as well paid, and it's harder to keep them in the workforce. I mean, I remember my daughter was working up at a school district up north as a teacher, and her Christmas bonus was a $5 Amazon gift card.
yeah, I've been there.
She left soon after for a job in the private sector that paid a lot more. But that, and that happens. But in the bus times, being a teacher is really a good place to be because it's a secure job. It gets you a good retirement. You've got good benefits. But we always have to manage that. I mean, for many years, we paid 100% of the people's health coverage, of our employees' health coverage. And one of the things that we first started to do, one of the first decisions we had to make when I got on the board, was how we if we were going to be able to do that going forward in the future. And I remember that we had a proposal submitted to us to do something like that or something similar, and we just felt as a board that that wasn't the direction that we needed to go to build on in the future. And so we sent everybody back to the drawing board, which caused some concern. But we really got a much better system in place, and we wound up being able to move into a self-insured position, which has saved the district quite a bit of money and allowed us to provide for our employees in a more efficient and a more effective fashion. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that you always have to balance. But, yeah, and I have to tell you, though, that there's very few jobs that are as rewarding as teachers. And I think if you talk to the teachers, they'll say, yeah, by the end of the year, I'm tired. But by the end of the summer, I am ready to go. I'm looking forward to my next group of kids. I love what I do. There's a lot of rewards to it. I mean, just being on the school board without as much contact with students as say, a regular teacher has been the most rewarding public service that I've been able to do. And I've said this many times. So it's been a terrific opportunity.
And I will say this, too. It takes a special kind of personality in person to be an effective school teacher, and 95, maybe 99% of the teachers in the Washington County School District they're invested. It's not just what they do, it's who they are, and you can tell. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people out there who couldn't do that. You know, you live your job when you're a school teacher. And it's not just something you do for 7 or 8 hours a day. It's something you do day and night. And speaking of the rewarding side of things, I've had many a teacher come up to me and say, hey, you know, I just heard from a student I had back in, you know, 1998 or something like that. And they talked about the good times they had in my class and the things I taught them. And it was an amazing, amazing reward for me that I was able to stick to my game plan and my life plan and be a part of this kid's life. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. Being able to see them grow up and do the things that you set the foundation for. We really appreciate our teachers and all the things that they do. And we've tried to pass that along as much as we can and yet continue to be fiscally responsible. And so that's always a challenge that we have to be on the lookout for.
I was up at the state tournament, by the way, changing topics a little bit, and Snow Canyon was playing Dixie, and actually Snow Canyon pulled off the upset and beat Dixie, but while I was there, I ran into Warren Brooks. Warren Brooks, for those that don't know, was a longtime principal of Snow Canyon High School. I mean, he bled the forest green and gold for many, many, I want to say, what, 15 years, 20 years, anyway.
It was 15 years. 15
years.
He moved over to Dixie.
And, yeah, now he's the principal of Dixie, has been for the last few years. And it was interesting to see. I'm like, who do you root for, Warren? He said, no, I'm the Dixie High's principal. I root for Dixie High School. But at the same time, I know that he was, and before he was a principal, by the way, Snow Canyon, he was also their soccer coach, among other things, teacher over there as well. So it was kind of funny to watch Warren squirm a little bit as he rooted for his new school and kind of had to root against his old school a little bit. So.
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges that administrators face, and that's something that we're looking at going forward, and I've been a big proponent of this, is that, you know, it used to be once you became a principal, you were pretty much there as long as you wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And after a while, your effectiveness kind of changes. And in a small community, say Enterprise or Water Canyon, those kind of things can happen, even in Hurricane to a certain extent. But St. George isn't the small community that it was. And so after about, and we've wrestled with this over the years, and we still haven't quite got it sorted out to where I'd like to see it. But I think going forward, our principals are being told, you know, after about 9 or 10 years, it's time maybe to start thinking about the next step. And, you know, Warren was there 15 years. We've got Mike Meese over at Pine.
I was just going to say, is this some foreshadowing that Mike Meese might be on the move, perhaps?
Well, no, I'm not anything that I would know or be able to say. But
yeah,
I think going forward, though, and we have a lot of people when they're appointed as young principals, I mean, after you've been in a job a certain period of time, there just becomes a certain, I don't know, comfort level with the job, so to speak. And that's why big organizations all over the world, including the military where I was, rotate their people from various things. I mean, in the military, you have a long-term assignment of 3 years. And if you're an officer, you're in a command structure for a year and a half, and then you're in a staff position for a year and a half, and then you're in a command position for a year and a half, and it just keeps rotating. And sometimes that works out well because, you know, human nature, the chemistry is really good and you're very effective and successful, and sometimes it's not quite as effective. Now, you can't rotate it on such a short-term basis in schools, but one of the things that we have been discussing for several years now is where do you draw that line for the senior administrators, particularly in our high schools. I mean, our high school principals, it's a draining job. As you said, Warren was up there at the state tournament, but he has all of these other things on his plate as well. And so after a while, you can get burned out, you know, you can become less effective. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things. And to his credit, Warren agreed to take a new position after such a long time at Snow Canyon. And we put Kim Monkers over there for the last 4 years, and she's just moved over to Crimson Cliffs.
Really?
Yeah. We announced that a couple of months ago.
Okay.
Because Rusty Taylor has taken a position in the district
in
office.
The district, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, when you have that, so we just have, and right now, like I was mentioning at the beginning of the program, we're starting to staff. The principals are the chief drivers of the staffing in their schools. They interview the teachers, they hire the teachers, they bring them on, they, you know, and so there's always a bit of shuffling, and right now we're getting into that period of time where even teachers who are retiring, teachers who are moving along, teachers who need to take a leave for a year or two for family reasons or whatever, and then we've got to rehire and replace them. Just a lot of personnel things that are going on, and whenever you plug in a spot, say as a principal somewhere, you've got to backfill it with either an assistant or something else. Or like when Kim moved over to Crimson, we filled up the spot in Snow Canyon, and we just kind of go forward from there. And so it's always a challenge, you know. And then I am always looking at the data for the various schools to see how they're doing and whether these changes have been effective or not. And I can tell you that in the case of Snow Canyon, it was really helped there. The performance of students there, you know, improved. And the performance of Dixie has been really good. Warren got into a really good spot over there. And so obviously for me, student performance and effectiveness of our administration and our teachers is always one of the most important things. And that's the factor I'm always looking at.
I was curious, you touched on this a minute ago, but I'm always curious. So every year, obviously you have teachers leave, you know, during the summer, and then you've got to fill holes. For instance, you go to a high school and they may, you know, an English teacher retired, a couple of math teachers moved on to different schools. You had, you know, maybe a Spanish teacher got out of the business or whatever. You said it's a principal's job, right, to fill those. Has the district ever had to step in and say, look, we're going to help you because, you know, we see that you've got a problem there?
Well, we always are available to help and so forth. I mean, the process of application comes through the district office, okay? Mm-hmm. But the principals are very hands-on in who they have on their teams. it's always a good idea for them to be able to influence that. And then, of course, when a principal gets into a school, most of the team is already there. And so one of the first challenges they have right out of the gate is to integrate themselves with that new team and, yeah. and get it to function. So, yeah, I mean, we, you know, if a principal looks like he's got a situation that needs a little more assistance from the district, then certainly the district, the HR department is right there to help.
Someone I've dealt with over the years a lot in schools are athletic directors, and there have been some fantastic ones. In fact, Kim Mockers, who is now, like you said, the new principal at Crimson, she was a fantastic athletic director. I've had some really great ones. Gary Higgins at Pineview, you know, Mike Bear over at Dixie, different guys have stepped up, and guys and women have stepped up and done the job. But I love athletic directors. I guess that's a job that is appointed by the principal?
Yes, yes, yeah. But we sometimes at the district level, they'll kind of help them, and they'll look at the chemistry of it, and they'll look at the experience. So if you've got a principal with not as much athletic experience, if there's an opening there where they need an athletic director with more experience, then sometimes they'll make some changes in that way to make sure that's effective. Because a huge part of the high school level in particular is all of the extracurricular activities. And that doesn't just mean athletics. That could be the band, that could be the choir, that could be the chorus,
debate,
or the orchestra.
Team, drama,
I mean, the drama, all of those things. And that's why our high school principals, they're kind of like point guards or coaches, if you would, say in the NBA, or the quarterback of the football team. I mean, they really are and need to be your superstars. And because they have so many different calls and so many different levels. And like all of us, they have their strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, sometimes you look at that and you try and develop your team to cover all of the bases. And sometimes an assistant is better in one area than in another area. And so sometimes, you know, it's a good idea to shake those up. And that's one other thing that we've talked about, and I think we're being much more successful about it, is giving our assistant principals. It used to be kind of the next man up philosophy, you know, at some of our schools, where it was, okay, you're the assistant. When the principal goes, you're the next guy. You just get it. And then you're there for 20 years or something. And that's okay to a certain extent, but it's also a great opportunity if you're an assistant principal to work for two or three other principals and underneath. So you get different management styles. You yeah. get to take advantage of them and see, oh, I really like the way so-and-so does this. I really like the way so-and-so does that. It works really well. I'm going to incorporate that. And as a result, when you do that, you're a much better and well-rounded candidate, so that when you get the chance to take the big chair, you obviously have a lot more experience and a lot more ideas about how to do things, and you can just hit the ground running more effectively. So there's a lot of that goes on, too. And we don't have a formal policy for that, but we really have been working to encourage our people to get as much experience as they can. And that's one of the reasons for these pools I was talking about earlier, is that one of the things they consider is, well, where have you been? What have you done? Who have you worked with? And, you know,
yeah,
it just really makes for a much better and well-rounded candidate when it does come time to fill a position.
We're talking with Terry Hutchinson, Washington County School Board. Terry, got to get a break in here. Terry, by the way, is also the author and the main man with Bookmarks. Has been doing that for, what did we say, 29 years now, Terry?
30 years in December, Andy.
30 years in December, man.
30 years in December, yeah.
One of us is getting old. No, we both are getting old, but...
One of us is getting a little older.
For sure. You can catch Bookmarks every morning. We play Bookmarks at about 6:52 or something like that. And then in the afternoons, what time does it play in the afternoons, Terry? Do you remember? 3:30 or something like that?
I want to say 4:30.
4:30, okay.
It's just short. It's a minute.
And, yeah, and the one in the morning's a little bit longer. All right, we've got a commercial break coming up. When we come back, we'll talk about fees. Yes, school fees. Why do we have to pay fees? What are they? How much are they? And all that with Terry Hutchinson. Right now, I have an opportunity. You want to go maybe catch some live music this weekend down at the Casablanca. Well, get ready to rock. The Casablanca Showroom in Mesquite, Nevada is bringing you an epic lineup of different rock tribute concerts every Saturday in the month of March. This Saturday, it'll be a tribute to 80s music, U2, and The Police. And although tickets are $40, we are right now giving away a pair of tickets to go to Casablanca this Saturday. And this is pretty cool. You get two tickets to get in. You also get free drinks for the evening. How cool is that? Give us a call right now, 673-5890. And, yeah, our main man, Stockton, will answer your call. And, again, 673-5890. To go see the 80s tribute band with U2 and Police music down at the Casablanca Resort in Mesquite. Again, if you want more information about it, go to CasablancaResort.com. But give me a call right now. We'll get you some free tickets and free drinks down in Mesquite. Right now, let's check weather.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show. On News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. Terry Hutchinson is with me on the phone line, sometimes host of this show and host of Bookmarks every day, every morning and afternoon on KDXU. Hi, Terry. You doing okay?
Hey, I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to have you on. Now, you had a project going with BYU and religious studies. Is that still going?
I are you talking about the Interpreter Foundation?
Yeah, Interpreter Foundation.
Yeah, yeah, we still do that. We still do that once or twice a month. Wow. I'm on every second Sunday night and every fifth Sunday.
If those of you that have not listened to that, make sure it's not something you go and you have on in the background while you're doing something else. Interpreter Foundation, you've got to focus on what the guys
do. It either you might fall asleep.
Yeah, well, no, I won't go there. But you definitely need to pay attention and really, like I said, pay close attention. A lot of people ask me and probably ask you too, Terry. How in the world does he have time to read all those books? And I know you do read most of them, but you also listen to some of them because you do a lot of driving.
Yeah. I mean, however I can get them. And, you know, some of them you read more, some of them you read less. And it's just something that I've gotten used to over the years. I mean, when you do it as long as I have, you just get in a, you get in a rhythm and you're able to just, you know, keep going day to day. And it's been very rewarding. I really enjoy having people come to me and say, hey, you know, you recommended this and I really enjoyed it. It's kind of like setting up people on a blind date and hopefully it works out.
Now, you review mostly fiction books, right? I mean, occasionally there's some nonfiction
in
there. Oh, you do
I'd
both.
Say it's more nonfiction. Oh,
okay.
Than but I try and get a broad spectrum, and I'm always looking for books that I think will interest the audience. But a lot of times it's books that interest me. And so there's always a good balance there between that. And because I think if something catches my interest and I can explain it right, it'll catch someone else's interest as well. And to me, that's the whole point of book criticism, is to look at it and say, okay, this is kind of what this book is, and this is what the author's trying to do. And then you let the reader decide or the listener decide, well, maybe that sounds like something I want to pick up and give it a go. Or sometimes no. Now there are some books that I never mention on the program. In fact, coming up on April 1st, we've got April Fool's Day. And for a long time, I used to do an April Fool's where I really bashed some book, because sometimes it's really fun to write something negative and funny and all the rest.
Yeah.
But I got away from that quite a bit because there's just too many good things out there, and I it's just not worth it.
Why waste your time?
This
right?
year we'll have a little different twist on the April Fool because it's a political book, but that's all I'll say about it. Everybody will have to listen on the first to see. it's been a really rewarding experience.
And for those of you that are saying, oh, books, I haven't read a book since high school, I would recommend you go out to, even if you don't want to read a book that's a little bit heavier, in content. Go out there and books are a fascinating source of entertainment. It's a lot. You know, you hear people all the time say, "Oh, the book was better than the movie." That's because usually they are. I was a big fan of Clive Cussler books and the Dirk Pitt series in particular. Just so entertaining and so great. And then they tried to do a movie. I think it was called Sahara, based on the Dirk Pitt character, and it was incredibly disappointing. Although Matt McConaughey was an interesting guy, but yeah, it was not very close to what actually took place in the book. And that actually, Terry makes me want to ask you, over the years, and you've read so many books, has there been a movie or two that was really pretty much as good or better than the book?
100%.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, the first one that comes to mind, mm-hmm. The Princess Bride.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Great movie.
Look, great casting, really funny lines, takes the best part out of the book. The book itself has a lot of adult satire in the background, okay. Where the author is talking about how he wanted his son to be able to enjoy the story of The Princess Bride. And as it turns out, when he got it, it was just old-fashioned and boring, and what had happened is when his father read it to him when he was a little boy, and it's like he'd edited out all of the boring
stuff, yeah.
He'd only given him the good parts. And that's hard to explain on screen, but they did a really good job with it. And yeah. so that's one where the movie is, I mean, the book is a different experience. I enjoy the book, but the movie is clearly head and shoulders better. Wow. Lord of the Rings is another one where it's the visuals of the movie that are spectacular. Mm-hmm. I was a little unhappy with the way they changed some of the storylines, but even so, that was another one where sometimes the movies can just do some spectacular things that even a book can't. And it really just depends on how they're doing with the visual. But those are a couple. But most of the time, yeah, the book is better and more intense.
And one thing about it, too, with the book, depending on how fast a reader you are, you may spend a week or a month with a book, and you spent, maybe 2 hours one evening with a movie. So it becomes a little more personal, too, as you as you gain this relationship with the book that you're reading. So,
well, here's something that they're finding, too, is that if you look at your screens right before you go to bed, you don't rest as well. And so what they're suggesting you do is put something aside for a half hour before you go to sleep. Put your phone down, put your screen down, put your tablet down. And I found that when I do that, the best way for me to kind of get a restful night's sleep, and I've always had insomnia over the years, which is partly why I can get all the books read. I find that if I put something down and take a physical book and read it for about 20 minutes before bed, it just really helps me rest easier in the night, and it's easier on my eyes and my brain and my psyche, for lack of a better word. So that's something I'd recommend to people.
The only bad thing I would say about that is if you're reading a heavy book and you're laying in bed holding it over your head and you fall asleep, it could be painful if you drop that book on yourself. My wife has done that.
Well, some of the books that I've read, they call them cinder blocks.
Yeah. Master and Commander, right?
That's one is actually not that thick, but the whole series is 6,000 pages. So yeah, that'd be one.
We're going to get another break in. When we come back, we do want to talk about school fees with Washington County School Board member Terry Hutchinson. And by the way, Mike Jay, I'm not going to give his last name, but Mike won the tickets to go down to Mesquite this Saturday night. Free drinks and a free concert at Casablanca Resort. Go to CasablancaResort.com to learn more about that concert. They're rocking it out down in Mesquite this, every Saturday night.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back at 9:50 on KDXU. Terry Hutchinson from the Washington County School District is with me today. Hi, Terry. Everything's good your way?
Oh, yeah, Andy. It's great.
Tell me about fees and schooling right now. You said there's a little bit of, kerfuffle going on.
Well, we a few years ago, the legislature passed a law requiring us to have what we call spend plans. And in other words, all of our clubs, all of our extracurriculars, everything, you know, for a long time, there were a lot of complaints about, oh, gosh, my daughter's a teenager, and all of a sudden it's costing me $3,000 to do all these things.
Or yeah,
my son's a basketball player, it's $800. And so the legislature just said, hey, we've got to be more transparent about that, and we've got to provide for students who are on fee waivers so that they have the same kind of opportunities as everybody else. And so that was something that they put into play, and we've been working on that. We have to tweak it every year. It takes up a lot of our time, and we've had some public hearings about it because, you know, some of our students take a trip to Disneyland every 3 or 4 years, and so how do we include that in the spend plan, and whether we should include that in the spend plan, and what are these opportunities all about? And that's something that we've been getting a lot of public comment on, and we still haven't settled on it yet. In fact, that's going to be something on our agenda again Monday, and then we have another public hearing about it on the 25th. So that's one thing. But the legislature also just passed, let me see where it is here, they passed a law about school fees to try and do away with them altogether. And they have partially funded that. So we are still kind of going through, and there's a 3-year phase out is what the last legislation said. And so we're still trying to get more clarity about that bill, because there's confusion by certain departments in the state as to what is and what is not a curricular fee. So they've given the school district some money to try and figure that out, but that's another thing that we've just had added to our plate by the legislature is, okay, we're going to have to do away with some of these fees that we've been routinely charging for kids to go to school. And I get it. I mean, I kind of see the theory behind it. In other words, this is public education. It's supposed to be free. Why are we paying all these fees?
Yeah,
and a lot of them are basic fees as opposed to, you know, we've made it possible for those who can't afford the fees or who are struggling to do it. But it's just something that the legislature and we have been continually wrestling with. And so this is something that we've got now that we'll be looking at. You know, there's a kind of an interesting thing. There were 127 education bills passed by the legislature this year.
Wow.
And 88 of them apply to K-12, which is us. And frankly, a lot of those bills come about because legislators have the idea that the school districts aren't really paying attention to the parents, or they get a complaint or something. And frankly, a lot of those complaints are valid. Not so much down here, although as I say all the time, we're not perfect and we're always trying to do better. With being responsive to parents, with being responsive to concerns, with meeting the needs of people. But realistically, a lot of these are coming from other districts in other areas of the state. And it's kind of reflected in what we call our Joint Legislative Committee from the Utah School Board Association. They have taken oppositions to bills that I know that we in Washington County would support. And so anyway, but because it's a large group, they kind of bond together, and that's part of the democratic process as well, is you get a group of people together and the majority votes, and then this is the position that you kind of take. But just so you know, they discussed 95 of these education bills. They supported 40 of them, and 33 passed of those that they supported. So 7% that they supported didn't pass. And then of the bills they opposed, there were 35 that they opposed. 15 of them didn't pass, but 20 of them did.
Oh, wow.
So in other words, the legislature's not really listening to the joint JLC up there. And part of that is because a lot of the votes for those positions of opposition or support come from the same school districts that are causing the issues that cause the legislature to say, we're not going to pay attention to you. You're going to do what we say. But it does affect our issue of local control. And I've always been a big proponent of that. I mean, it's a constitutional feature for us, is that I am responsible to the voters in my district at a level that no other elected official state is. And every one of our 7 school board members are responsive to the people of our neighborhood. And so it really is a very intimate relationship between the taxpayers, the voters, and those who control the schools. And the reason is so that you can have the community educate the students the way the community wants. That's the theory. And so if they want to do something different up in Salt Lake or in Ogden or Murray or wherever it is, they should have the right to do that. And I think for the most part, they should. I think there's a couple of issues where, yeah, I agree that the legislature needed to rein them in, so to speak. One of them being the pornographic book issue. I felt there still needed to be some controls there, and certainly some of the districts up there have not been in compliance like we have or that I would feel they should. So anyway, those are some of the things that are done. But yeah, they passed the school fee bill. They passed the school safety bill. There is going to be some money attached to that, and we've got to figure all that out. There's a pilot for a pay for performance for teachers.
Really?
That is going to start in a couple of years. You're not mandated. They're just trying to sort it out, and it's a lab. And that's kind of been the golden, that's been the thing that everybody's trying to get, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, is how to do that most effectively. And there's been lots of things tried over the years, and nothing really seems to work and be effective. And so the legislature's given people the opportunity to take another stab at it. They're running it through Utah State University. And so anyway, I don't know all the details about it, but it's something that they're working on. A lot of other things, like I said, school threat penalty. There were 127 different bills that were passed, 88 of which apply to us. So
do you have any thoughts?
Good legislative session.
Do you have any thoughts, by the way, on the bill they were talking about where training teachers who choose to have a concealed carry permit, giving them free training? Is that a good idea?
Sure.
Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as long as it depends on who pays for that. But we actually already have, we do already have provisions for things like that in our district. And we will support the legislature that way.
Very, very cool. Back to the fee thing. I was thinking about at one point during my lifetime, I had 5 children going to schools in the Washington County School District. And the start of the school year, they would all bring home these notes. I need the X amount of dollars for shop class and for, you know, for football team and for band class and for choir and dance, you know, and that really is a tough burden sometimes on parents when, you know, in August when maybe July or August, you start getting these bills and you realize you owe hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars of fees so your kids can participate.
That's what we've really been wrestling to try and get under control.
Yeah.
And it's hard for families, especially if you don't qualify for the fee waivers.
Yeah.
You know, once your income is such, and you could be in that place where I don't quite qualify, and a lot of people don't want to qualify. They say, "Hey, this is a benefit for my child. I'm gonna suck it up, and I'm gonna, you know, support that as best I can." And so we're really trying to balance it. And it actually makes there be a lot more accountability on the part of coaches, on the part of advisors, on the part of clubs and everybody to say, hey, wait a minute, do we really need to be spending this money in this way? And so in that, I do think it's been a real benefit.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you, Terry. Great to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Appreciate you coming on. This has been the Andy Griffin Show. BYU is coming up next on KDXU.